Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Free for All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. Many of you who listen to the podcast on iTunes or Google Play, by the way, if you do listen to the podcast there, please consider giving a review. That's always helpful. If you listen there, you're familiar with Free for All Fridays. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we talk apologetics, theology, how to explain and defend our Catholic faith. On Fridays, we just get to have fun, talk about whatever I find to be interesting. And now that the Council of Trent is available on YouTube, I decided that every episode, not just the episodes on theology or apologetics, but also our Free for All Fridays, I would like them to be available on YouTube as well. I mean, if I have them on the podcast app, why not place them on YouTube? I just want the entire podcast experience to be available on YouTube. And what's nice about it is sometimes these episodes are great things to share with non-Catholic friends and family members because it's, you know, topics that won't hit you over the head with Catholicism necessarily. It's just our time to have fun. I mean, that's one thing that we can do to share with other people. And if you are coming to this episode and you're not Catholic, but you thought the topic was interesting, hey, welcome. I'm glad you're here. And maybe you could check out some more of the episodes on our podcast and more videos on our Council of Trent feed. Click the subscribe button if you like what you see to get notifications when new videos will be going up. So today on Free for All Friday, I want to talk about the most bizarre legal defenses. I really enjoy law. I actually thought at one point I was going to become a lawyer. So I signed up. I paid for the LSAT, law school aptitude test. I don't know what it stands for. I just know it's the test you take to get into law school. Studied for it, paid for it, didn't take it. Because I realized I was choosing law for all the wrong reasons. It's a field where you can end up in a lot of debt with a lot of stress. So you should only choose law if you have a passion for the law. You have a passion for the practice of law and not grandstanding in a courtroom either. From my experience talking with attorneys and others, really a lot of things that attorneys do more of is not giving rousing addresses to a packed jury. It's usually highlighting things in an office. So I really enjoy studying the law and seeing, though, in court cases that we have a wonderful judicial system in our country where everyone is entitled to a defense. No matter how awful the person may be, they're entitled to a defense. That's why it was interesting when you had the Me Too movement and there were people who were protesting. I think it was Alan Dershowitz who had been hired by Harvey Weinstein to represent him in at least a civil suit, if not a criminal case. I can't remember. I think it was Harvey Weinstein. I think it was Dershowitz representing him. And people were protesting that someone like Dershowitz would represent someone like Harvey Weinstein. But here's the thing. If he doesn't, somebody will. I mean, everyone is entitled to a defense. It doesn't mean a lawyer has to provide his services to every client who is out there. He can withdraw his services. But what's good about our justice system is we don't say, oh, you're obviously guilty, so you don't need a lawyer at all. You should have a lawyer, and you should avoid, I love this one phrase when it comes to the law, the lawyer who defends himself has a fool for a client. Do you ever see, and there's a lot of cases actually where people will take the stand, they'll dismiss their counsel, and they'll try to represent themselves in court, and they have the right to do that, provided they can abide by the rules of the court. But all that stuff I just find to be interesting. And so actually, I won't talk about this in today's episode, but I think one of these guys, I forget his name, he represented himself in court and he was clearly mentally ill. So he got a witness for the defense to talk about how he had had a microchip implanted in him that had caused him to commit the crimes. Bizarre stuff. So everyone has the right to a defense and some legal defenses are more bizarre than others. So that's what we're going to talk about today here on the Council of Trent podcast. So let's jump into some of these just weird defenses that people have put forward in criminal cases. The first one would be the matrix defense or the simulation hypothesis defense. This is the idea that the defendant, the person who is accused of the crime, the defendant, is not guilty because he or she sincerely believed that they were in a simulation. This has really happened, not the simulation, or has it? Not that, but rather that there are individuals who have claimed that they believe reality is a simulation, like the movie The Matrix with Keanu Reeves, that we're all just in some kind of simulated computer program. And so they didn't think that the world was real, or they thought that they had to commit an act of violence to get out of the Matrix. So two famous examples of this is a woman named Tonda Lynn Ansley. And she shot her landlord in broad daylight in front of people. And she had a good relationship with her landlord, but she said that she had become convinced that she was living in the Matrix or living in a simulation, and that her landlord had appeared to her in a series of dreams and was behind all of this. And so she thought that she had to kill her landlord in order to escape the simulation. So she argued for self-defense. The other one is a guy named Vadim Misigis. And he had a young female roommate. Well, this woman rented out a room to him, and he killed her and dismembered the body, and then later claimed in his affidavits that he believed that he was in a simulation. And what ended up happening is both of them were found. I think Ansley was found not guilty by reason of insanity, and Vadim Misigis was found incompetent to stand trial. And so he was sent off to a mental institution. And Ansley, I think, also was committed to a mental institution. So that is, it's always tricky when you have not guilty by reason of insanity. What was that movie? I want to say it had Edward Norton in it. Was it Primal Fear? I think it was. It's the one where he pretends to be, that movie where he pretends to be insane in order to be found not guilty. And then ends up getting off or being sent to a mental institution instead of prison. There's a great episode of Law and Order SVU where there's a child psychiatrist whose son is murdered by a sociopathic child. And so in revenge, he kills the sociopathic child by smuggling a gun into the courtroom. And then later, because he's a psychiatrist, he gets on the stand and he can perfectly deliver a monologue about how he just went absolutely insane in that moment and couldn't be held responsible. Then later he tells the DA afterwards that he faked all of it and he just wanted revenge, but he promises he would never, that sociopathic kid he killed would have killed again and he would not. So I always think that there's somebody in Law and Order, especially Law and Order SVU, the writers, there's someone on the writing team whose job is to sit down and go on Wikipedia or go on the internet, go to tabloid magazines and find the weirdest trial stuff, the weirdest crimes they can find, and then turn episodes into it. Because I have, when I've read some of these weird things, I'm like, oh yeah, that was in a Law & Order episode. So, you know what's another episode I need to do on Free For All Friday soon? The best Law & Order guest stars. And I find the best guest stars on Law & Order SVU are actually comedians. Comedians play really good psychopathic villains. Two on Law & Order SVU would be Robin Williams, plays a wonderful villain. It's a whole episode about the Milgram experiments and appeals to authority. And then Martin Short plays like this almost demonic fake psychic. It is, oh, he's so creepy. Look up Martin Short, Law & Order SVU. It's really good. All right, but before I continue to the other examples, I want to talk a little bit more about the simulation hypothesis. Because this is not, it's far-fetched for sure, but there's a lot of people who are proposing it, and there are people online, at least, maybe not a lot, but there are people who talk about it. There is a movie that just came out that you can watch. It's kind of a documentary on this called A Glitch in the Matrix. And it's about people who sincerely believe that they live in a simulated reality. And you know, what is it like for these people? You can find articles online of people who will say that weird things you see in the world are examples that we live in a simulation. There's actually a Rick and Morty episode that, now for my Catholic listeners, Rick and Morty, I would call it, if I had to rate it, how the bishops rate things, oh, morally offensive. But there's a good episode of Rick and Morty about where they are trapped in simulations within simulations. So that's interesting. But so the movie is A Glitch in the Matrix. It just came out. If you want to look at a fascinating documentary on people who think they live in a simulation, how could it be we live in a simulation? You can check that out. Really, the philosopher who has proposed this the most is Nick Bostrom. He's at Oxford University. He published a paper back in 2003 called Are You Living in a Computer Simulation? And he was making an argument that, you know, if there's, especially let's consider a large multiverse, and eventually humans reach the ability to create simulations, and they create a near infinite number of simulations, he says that the odds of us living in a simulation based on that logic is near one. I'm not convinced of that. I'm not even sure that computing power, that there are limits to computing power, to the speed of light, obviously, how semiconductors, how fast they can operate. So I'm not even convinced we could build a computer fast enough and large enough and cool it enough to simulate the complexities of our environment. I mean, the Earth itself has, like, you know, 10, or the universe has 10 to the 80 atoms in it. I don't know how many atoms make up the Earth or even just the human brain, but to simulate all that, and even if you did do a simulation, I don't believe if you simulated a reality in that simulation, the beings you create would be conscious. I'm skeptical of that. I don't think it's possible, frankly, that you could create a perfect simulation and it would just be the most realistic version of The Sims, hopefully with floating diamonds and crystals over people's heads. So that's the Matrix defense. You know, people who are, maybe they watch The Matrix too much and kind of warp their minds. This is related a little bit to another defense in court about watching a movie too much to warp your mind. And that would be the case of John Hinckley Jr., who was found guilty of the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan. And the reason he did that was he was kind of obsessed with the 1976 Martin Scorsese film Taxi Driver. So this is Hinckley Jr. on the left. This is Robert De Niro, who plays Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver, who is a guy, as the film suggests, a taxi driver who gets caught up in the seamy underworld of New York City. He rescues a 12-year-old child prostitute played by Jodie Foster, and he also tries to assassinate a senator running for president. And so Hinckley Jr. he wanted to impress Jodie Foster. He even moved to Connecticut, where she lived, where she was going to college at Yale, and he never made contact with her. She just kept ignoring him. And he thought that if he assassinated Reagan, that would impress Foster. And so one of his defense in court was that his mind had just been warped by the movie Taxi Driver. So it's kind of similar there. All right, the next bizarre legal defense is the Twinkie defense. This is the defense that was put forward to defend Dan White, who was found guilty of the murders of Harvey Milk and I want to say George Moscone. I think his first name was George. Harvey Milk and Moscone. Moscone was the mayor of San Francisco. This was the shooting occurred on November 27th, 1978. White killed the mayor of San Francisco and the supervisor, I think he was head supervisor, one of the board of supervisors, Harvey Milk, who was a very prominent, probably the most prominent gay politician, self-identified gay politician, one of the most prominent self-identified gay individuals in the 1970s. So it was a shock to many people when he was killed. And so at trial, what was argued, and many people misunderstand why White did this, and they think, oh, this is just homophobia, why he killed Harvey Milk. Probably it was more that White felt that he was just an unappreciated. He was also a member of the Board of Supervisors, and he just felt unappreciated, snubbed, had fallen into a depression. And so his lawyers said that because he was in this clinically depressed state, he had a diminished capacity to understand his actions. And so he should not be held responsible for his crime. So when you hear the Twinkie defense, which has popped up in popular culture, what White's defense team was not arguing, they were not arguing that he ate a bunch of Twinkies and the sugar rush gave him a diminished mental capacity. That's not what they were asking. They were not saying the Twinkies made him kill Moscone and Milk. What they were saying was that he fell into a clinical depression. The depression made him less responsible for his actions. And the fact that he ate a lot of junk food was indicative of his depression. And it was a passing detail in the trial when they said that his diet had changed. He was clearly depressed. He was eating junk food, things like Twinkies. And I think a reporter covering the case latched onto that detail. And it's been called the Twinkie defense ever since. So, all right. So next up, we have the Shaggy defense. Remember Shaggy? He had that single he released in 2000, It Wasn't Me. And in the song, it's about a guy who goes to his friend. He says, hey, I got a really big problem. I cheated on my girlfriend and she caught me. So what do I do? And his friend's advice is simply to say, it wasn't me. Just completely deny it. And he says, you know, but she caught me on camera. It wasn't me. She caught me having relations on the sofa. It wasn't me. Just say it wasn't you. And that's it. And so that's the essence. It's been called the Shaggy defense, primarily after a variant of it. Now, not obviously appealing to the artist Shaggy, but commenters noticed this in the trial of R. Kelly in 2007. And so they claimed that the claim was that R. Kelly was in the hip hop artist R. Kelly was in a pornographic video engaging in sexual acts with an underage minor. And so he was charged with this crime. And his defense was to basically say, well, it's not me. I know it looks like me in the video, but it's not me. Actually, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam did something similar when it came out in an old high school yearbook, tried to say he had dressed up in blackface. Was it blackface or as a Klansman? I think it was his blackface. Regardless, it was dressed up in an offensive costume. And the Virginia governor at first apologized, but then later he said, you know what? I don't think it was me. So maybe he went and talked to Shaggy's friend. He's like, you know, they caught me in the yearbook and dressed up in a racist outfit. Just say it wasn't you. It wasn't me. So that would be, so it's come to be known as the Shaggy defense. Wait, why did I write Twinkie defense here? It's supposed to say Shaggy defense. If you're watching on YouTube, it's written poorly. I will say this. It wasn't me. I didn't do this particular slide. So it wasn't me. All right. Next up, we have the affluenza defense. So if I talk about affluenza, you probably might have a flashback to 2013. That was when Ethan Couch, a teenager, acquired beer. I think he may have stolen it. I can't remember. But he engaged in drunk driving. His blood alcohol level was 0.24, so three times the legal limit. And he ended up colliding with a stalled vehicle on the side of the road, which ended up hitting another vehicle coming in the other direction. Four pedestrians were killed. I think one of the passengers in Couch's vehicle was left paralyzed. Couch himself was, obviously, he wasn't killed, and he wasn't seriously injured either, which is interesting. When it comes to drunk driving, this is something that's one of the most, I don't know the word to use to describe it, but it is infuriating that someone could be so reckless and engage in something like drunk driving. And the people who suffer are usually the innocent people who had nothing to do with it. Like when a drunk driver gets into an accident, it's usually the other people who die or are seriously injured, not the drunk driver. And I'm not sure why that is. Maybe there's a study to say why drunk drivers, or maybe it's just in my head from reading reports. But I feel like they're less likely to be injured. Maybe it's because they're so intoxicated that they're just maybe relaxed when the collision happens. I don't know. But it is something where it's hard to see that the people who didn't do anything wrong suffer. And then on top of that, in these DWI cases where the person who caused all this harm seems to be punished very lightly. And that seems to be the case here with Couch. So his defense attorneys argued that Couch suffered from something called affluenza. Now, affluenza is a condition. It's not a medical condition, but it's a social phenomenon that had been discussed before, long before this case. And it's referring to people in the developed world, you know, first world problems, who have so many choices available to them, they develop a kind of malaise or depression as a result of it. We get this way too, you know, oh, I got Netflix and Hulu and I can buy anything on Amazon and all this stuff just can't make us happy. And all the choices we have stress us out because we don't know what to choose given the abundance of choices that we have. Our caveman brains did not evolve to handle the millions of choices we have on the internet. Our brains evolved to handle, do I want berries or do I want squirrel? Probably wasn't squirrel. Probably was like some other Mesopotamian, small African creature or whatnot, you know, for where human beings engaged in hunter-gatherer societies. But the point remains, we did not develop brains that could handle all the choices we have. So there's a malaise as a result. But also, so Couch's lawyers brought that up. But more, I think what they focused on was the claim that because he was like a spoiled rich kid who had always had his problems solved in life, he didn't understand the consequences of his actions because Couch had never had to face the consequences of his actions because of his wealthy parents. And so if that makes your blood boil, that he should not be held criminally responsible for the deaths of four people, property damage, maiming others, you're not alone. Many people feel that. I feel that way. Many people were mad at the judge in this trial because he gave Couch probation and then I think a short jail term for violating his probation. But he had given other people who had been involved in serious DUI cases 20 years in prison. But Couch got special treatment. And maybe that's because he's wealthy. And that's it always stinks. You know, we want to believe that everybody who's brought before a court of law is equal before the law. But that is, it's hard, though, when you have wealth, you can afford a really good attorney. And if you don't, you get an overworked public defender. So I'm not sure how to resolve all of that. It's good. I think we have one of the best justice systems in the world, but there's always room for improvement, you know. So, but the affluenza defense, that will definitely go down as a fascinating defense that was put out there. However, there have been other very wealthy people who have been held responsible for their actions. So I don't think it's going to be a widespread defense to be able to be used. It'll depend on the judge you get. Here's another one that's fascinating, the wrong twin defense. Okay, so this is a case coming out of Malaysia in Kuala Lumpur. And so it says, a pair of identical twins was acquitted and discharged by the High Court here Friday of drug trafficking because of difficulty in identifying which of the two was in possession of the drugs 5 years ago. Justice Zahara Ibrahim, who described the case as unique, said that although our Sathis Raj and our Sabarish Raj, the twin brothers, 27, looked alike and had identical DNA, which made it difficult to differentiate between them, there was no doubt that one of them was the culprit. So the judge says, my job as required by the law is to determine whether the prosecution has succeeded in establishing a prima facie, I always mispronounce that, on the face of it claim against the two accused. In this case, both are identical twins. So you have a problem. If you have the evidence points to two people equally, and only one person committed the crime, since you can't punish an innocent person, you'd have to let the guilty person go. That's one of the virtues of our justice system, most Western justice systems, is that we would rather have, and that goes back to ancient Rome, better that 10 guilty people go free than one innocent person be punished. So, and that's a good thing, because it's always really, really bad to punish the innocent for crimes that they have not committed. So the identical twin defense is used here. And by the way, there is in Malaysia for the drug trafficking, they could have gotten the death penalty, actually. No joke. Other countries around the world, if you traffic drugs, they'll execute you or they'll put you in prison for life for drug trafficking. Sometimes there's life sentences here, I think, for really egregious or repeat drug trafficking offenses. But we don't give the death penalty out for it, but they do in other countries. So I've thought about actually having my kids, when they get older, watch this television show, Locked Up Abroad, and it will scare the living daylights out of you when it comes to committing a crime overseas. You don't want to do that. Our American justice system is really nice and squishy and cushy compared to some justice systems in other countries that have zero tolerance policies when it comes to things like drug trafficking. Because what happens is you'll get like a young girl in the U.S., falls in love with a guy over the internet. He lives in another country. He flies her out for this luxurious, expensive vacation in paradise. And on the way home, he tells her, hey, can you just take this bag of heroin, tape it to your stomach, tape it under your thigh? Nobody will know you have it. And she does it. Then she gets caught with the drug sniffing dogs at the airport, and she gets locked up in prison for the rest of her life in some foreign country, or given the death penalty, or something like that. And it's absolutely scary. You think, okay, one little thing, it's not going to be that big a deal. Yeah, it is a big deal. Don't mess around with that. Unless you can blame it on your identical twin, which has happened in other cases. This is not, it's rare, but it's not like only once in a blue moon. There was a Colorado soldier, Aaron Gregory Lucas. He said his identical twin brother could have been the one who committed the sex crimes he was accused of. So he says, okay, you got this evidence that says I committed these sex crimes. I have a twin brother. Maybe it was him. It wasn't me. Maybe it was him. And so if the evidence points to two people and only one did it, you don't have a case there. So you've got a serious problem. This also shows up in Law & Order SVU. I mentioned it before. This was an interesting Law & Order SVU episode where you have, it's actually based on, could have been based on an identical twin case. and an older case involving John Money. He was a sexologist. Ugh. And there was a boy brought to him who had a botched circumcision. So he said to the parents, just raise him as a girl. And so they did, and it totally messed up his mind. He discovered he was a boy later in life when he went through puberty, and then he ended up committing suicide in his 30s. A super tragic case. But he had an identical twin brother. And so when he was dressed as a girl, raised as a girl with his twin brother, the doctor had them do weird sex acts together to reinforce gender roles. It's gross stuff. I say this, but the Law & Order SVU episode, what happened was, it was about a boy whose circumcision had been botched. He had an identical twin brother. The boy was raised as a girl by this psychologist who molested both of them. So the twin boys got together, killed the doctor, and the evidence pointed to one of them, but neither twin would give up the other twin. And so they had this very close bond, and they couldn't prosecute them. And there is just this final scene of the episode where the twin boys are on other sides of glass. I think it's mirrored glass, but they can still tell where the other twin is and put the hands together. It's beautiful and haunting, and it just shows, well, Law & Order SVU, that there's, you know, there's some guy who goes on the internet, here's a weirdo story, that'll work for the script this week. So the wrong twin defense, another example of strange and bizarre legal defenses. And finally, the last one, the Chewbacca defense. You know, so what do you do? This is the case from the episode of South Park where they're parodying Johnny Cochran, who is known for just using poetic rhetoric to confuse the juries. So in this case, he's representing a major record label in a lawsuit in this case, and he needs to get the record company off. And so I'm trying to learn the details. The point is, he just confuses the jury, Johnny Cochran style. And this is called the Chewbacca defense in how he does it. And I think it's hilarious. Now, you can in courts just switch the subject to confuse people, but this is turning that strategy up to 11. So let me just bring this up here. I will play that for you now.
But ladies and gentlemen of this supposed jury, I have one final thing I want you to consider. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Chewbacca. Chewbacca is a Wookiee from the planet Kishik, but Chewbacca lives on the planet Endor. Now think about that. That does not make sense. Damn it.
What?
He's using the Chewbacca defense.
Why would a Wookiee, an 8-foot-tall Wookiee, want to live on Endor with a bunch of 2-foot-tall Ewoks? That does not make sense. But more importantly, you have to ask yourself, what does this have to do with this case? Nothing. Ladies and gentlemen, it has nothing to do with this case. It does not make sense. Look at me. I'm a lawyer defending a major record company, and I'm talking about Chewbacca. Does that make sense? Ladies and gentlemen, I am not making any sense. None of this makes sense. And so you have to remember, when you're in that jury room deliberating and conjugating the Emancipation Proclamation, does it make sense? No. Ladies and gentlemen of this supposed jury, it does not make sense. If Chewbacca lives on Endor, you must acquit.
If Chewbacca lives on Endor, you must acquit. So, hey, that was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Free For All Friday. Sometimes it's just fun to talk about random, interesting stuff. I hope you can share this with others. If you're watching for the first time on YouTube, I hope you enjoyed having the video elements to normally what is an audio podcast. If you're listening on the podcast, be sure to go and check this out on YouTube. Become a subscriber there. Just search Council of Trent on YouTube. You can check it out. If you want to help us to do more videos, more rebuttal videos, be sure to become a premium subscriber at trenthornpodcast.com. For just $5 a month, you get access to bonus content, catechism study series, submit questions for future episodes. Whole lot of fun. Definitely go and check that out at trenthornpodcast.com. Thank you all so much, and I hope you have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trenthornpodcast.com.